one also heavy. You say that is our department. We bring oversight to that department. But when the department is not doing well, you know, have entities that have disclaimers, we tend not to want to indicate to people if that entity is falling among those that we must do oversight to. So nobody wants to change something that is not very good. Everybody wants to appreciate what is good. So, thank you very much. Those were my opening. I'm also a bit careful of time. Because time is money. I said so in the first meeting that I shared here. Thank you very much. I've already welcomed the PM. He has also clarified that the minister would have loved to join us as well. So, but he's already working. In terms of the agenda, I've dealt with the opening and welcome. By now, I can see Honorable Kintan is feeling more than welcome. His bracket is off already. So, thank you very much. The second apology. My secretary of communication is the done with the apologies. Are we done? So we think those that didn't send any apologies, so we are not going to take it.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Member, PM, and what if you clarify that Honorable Madoka? She's attending the social development meeting. She says the same of the
okay, thank you very much. So I think we are together. So we are done with the apologies then. We Let me, before going to the next item,
here, thanks for allowing me. Just to mention that we've got a guest member with us from the Small Business Development Portfolio, Honorable Toby Chance.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. You're
taking
welcome.
A chance.
You're welcome.
But I need to take a chance.
Honorable Mr. Dan.
I'm just looking at the stature of the man and his apparent age. Small business.
Thank you very much. So, still managing time, we want to move to the main reason why we are here. So, just to get a report on enterprise associates and payment of suppliers within 30 days. Quite an interesting report that we are about to receive. So we may want to suggest DM and acting DG, you may start by introducing your team. Never mind that you did last week. So to me, you just look like the twins, all of you. It's too many twins. So you look for the same. So you take me slowly. I will then know who is who.
I'm glad you say that. I am the deputy minister, and as you said correctly, Minister sent his apology. He's actually the select committee in, and this afternoon he'll be answering our follow questions in the NCFP. And then I'll allow my twin to introduce.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, and Deputy Minister and colleagues. I'm Sam Mugela. I'm leading the team. With me here is Mr. Lidwaba, is the Chief Director ICT.
Okay.
He's newly appointed. I think he started this month. The CFO, Mr. Mforo, whom we know, and Madam Belinda. I've got also colleagues who managing the parliamentary-related matters who are at the back there. They may introduce themselves. Also, two from communication, two from the DG's office, and also from the Deputy Minister's office.
And one from IT.
One from IT. Okay. Thanks so much. But you can introduce yourself, colleague.
You don't have the mic, so if you can
shout. Oh, my name is Kando, my surname is Wababa, I'm from the office of the Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much.
Morning, Chair. My name is Kando.
Thank you.
Morning, Chair. My name is Kando.
Thank you. Express it in English and in your own mother tongue.
My own mother tongue is good.
Yeah, but you are struggling expressing and explaining things. So you must take these things. You must not be shy and say these things. But when you go to the communities, they want to hear what exactly is this animal called public work in their own mother tongue. And I like your attempt on those
questions.
Thank you.
But the good thing is that you accepted. You attempted to explain it in your mother tongue. That is what I'm appreciating. So I'm encouraging you to continue practicing. If you remember, practice makes perfect. So you try. But you did not first attempt.
Joseph Oduwole from PNG.
Okay, thank you very much. So, can we then hand over to helping the people to continue?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Member. We are going to make a presentation as already articulated in relation to the resources, enterprise resources with containment of the supply of indigenous regulated currently. The CFO is going to run the entire presentation. We are going to support him with respect to responses to questions. He's going to cover the character and classification of the payments, both DPW and also TFCD, and also cover the digital nature of the operations of the department, and also come up with the ICT fee as to what is current, what is the future, where we will be in terms of the ICT fee. And also indicate the characterization of the payment. What are those?
Yeah.
What is that what they in the department?
Thanks, DG. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
To improve that, if that is possible, then we can continue.
Thanks, Chair, Honourable Members, and Deputy Minister and colleagues. I will actually give you some presentation, which hopefully by the end we have a clearer understanding of where we are as the department in terms of compliance or in terms of non-compliance with respect to spending payment. I'm not going to get into the first piece that it talks about the purpose, which is actually articulated. I'll rather just move on to take a little bit of a step back so that we can understand the context under which it operates. And I thought we should just try and look at our operating context and then on slide 6. The department, as you know, Honorable Chair members, has been split into two operations or reporting entities. There's the main boat and there's the PMT. Now, what is important to do is at least give members an indication of what the budgets are and the scale of operations for each one are. If you look at the main boat on slide 6, we've got a total budget of about 6.8 or 6.9 or 7 billion right now. And of that budget, 86% of that budget is actually spent or used on transfers and subsidies. And that's where we have our that we spend money on under transfer. That's about 6.1 billion rand. The balance is compensation of employees, which is almost half a billion rand, together with about 6 billion, which is half a billion rand, and a small number of 13 million rand for additional equipment. So by all accounts, the expenditures under the main boat are practically around things that are not sourcing services from service providers. As in your compensation, your transfer, only the extent of the goods and services. And when you unpack the goods and services that we're talking to here in the main boat, it's largely money spent on our travel agents, on our communication accounts, very kind of expenditure line items for which we use service providers. And who providers will be around for the period so that it's no such issue that we are experiencing. when you look at the PMT of meaningful survival mechanisms, so it's on an ongoing basis. Now, if you take the PMT input, now that's the next operations that we have, the scale of the operations of the PMT, we say about 19 billion rand worth of budget in the PMT, and how that is made up of is the facilities management system.
Sign up the work, get people paid, and all of that. So that's the kind of
challenge that we wanted to communicate with us. And on site level, we're just trying to indicate what the portfolio looking like and the location of or the clustering of the portfolio. We've taken it throughout the entire regional offices that are indicated, the 11 regional offices. And what we have in terms of the portfolio made up of the land parcels and the number of structures that we have. We've got about 31,000 or 30,000 land parcels all over the country, and you can see the strength of this land parcel. And on this land parcel, there are 3,000 structures on this land parcel, spread throughout the country. So, if you do work in this kind of portfolio, you can imagine the complexities and the amount of tasks that it comes from. And we know that by all accounts, this is the largest real estate portfolio in Africa. And at times, we often think that we've not done the exercise yet. We've made it in some industry. And now, and we can talk about this with a fair level of confidence because we've done the work. We've rebuilt the asset listing into this register, and we know what you own, where it is, and how you own. So that's what we can do. And on the back of this, it's a whole lot of work that needs to happen to maintain this portfolio. And that's where the of how do you comply and not comply. Now, to help an operation of this nature, when you are processing 14,000 payments, you've got these kind of operations that are indicated. You cannot do this thing with a manual system. I mean, things are just through the cracks. So when you look at the operations, again, just coming back to the main board that is empty. Well, the main board that you know, honorable members, we've got five programs under the main board, which are listed there. And the main board being a main board is actually, that's what site 13, with the terms of accounting there is a cash-based account. So the systems that you are using are the systems that are pretty much so not just of bank, the country system materials, and so so these are systems that are pretty much described. Every government department uses them. And these systems are on a basis of cash. So for logins, for instance, you can only raise a purchase order in logins and that's where that. And then you can't check this going beyond that point. So there's a different mechanism that I need to have to be able to track the things that you are saying that we have. And that's what I was saying about that. On the other side of PMT, which is a property management trading entity, is a trading entity established in terms of Treasury Regulation 19. And in terms of Treasury Regulation 19, the PFMA, all trading entities must account on the basis of a quarter of accounting. That's where the work that has to do with property management and our construction projects happens. And if you can see with the different programs that we have, your real estate investment services, your construction project management, your real estate management services, your real estate information registry services, and your facilities management. You can see this all related to the management of our property. When the decision of statement is put up, the two operations where the main thing is to look at the nature of the problem that we have. It's much more around policy, monitoring and evaluation, and over and above the coordination of the PWP. This side here is where the actual real work of construction happens from a retail operation. And in terms of the PFMA, this requires that to account for this thing that you are accounting for on a poor account, basically. And the system that you use here, you cannot use the systems that are prescribed by National Treasury because they will not talk to your business. So we're going to a process of migrating from the old system. Remember, everything else is still happening under your logins and BAS cash-based processes. So we're going to convert and migrate ourselves by having clustered the nature of the office on the property management agency to be and utilize systems that provide an appropriate service. And that's where the ERP, Enterprise Resource Planning System, comes in. Where you need the financial system, interfaced with the operational transactional systems to be able to produce information on an online real-time basis and be able to provide you with the efficiencies that you need for the nature of the operation that we're talking about, for the nature of the operation that I'm capable of the vast portfolio that I'm talking about. So same to the financial system, the financial module, it also provides for a procurement module. Then we currently, because we haven't moved into the other system, we are currently using this buffer, which is much more of legacy old systems that we need to convert and move to the ERP system. Currently, we're using the WCS. WCS is called the acronym for the Works Control System, which is a system that actually helps us with the management of our construction project. Then PMIS, which is the Property Management Information System, which is the one that is assisting us with the payment of all property related expenses. But these two systems, again, I'm going to emphasize, we are currently using them now, but unfortunately, we are still systems that are cash basis, so they are not accrual basis systems. And then the intention is to move into Atlas, which is the entire enterprise resource planning asset lifecycle management. So when you take the entire asset from planning right up to disposal, you want to introduce a system that will make sure that the flow of lifecycle can actually do the things that we need to do. And central to this is the removal asset registry. And we'll talk about that later. Moving on to slide 14. And this is just almost what I've tried to explain in the previous slide, just to indicate in pictorial form what it is that I spoke about. That you've got a manual system on the side based on the old, on the legacy trading system, and PMIS. You can need some kind of a manual integration into Sage, and in that way be able to provide us with a interface to the bank server so that we can then pay. And all of this will happen in a manual form. For the mere, and as long as we still have not put in and introduced the enterprise resources. So how do we manage this business for now, given that we still have manual, largely on manual systems, and largely track based on the scale we're talking about? We put in, on slide 15, this is an indication, we've actually introduced and developed in-house an invoice tracking system. When the 30-day payment challenge became a real challenge and started tracking it, we had to run and get to a point of how do we control this, because it was just veering off into a particular direction that we couldn't control. So we developed with our ICT colleagues in the department, not outside internally, we developed the in-house system that we called Reapatal, which means we are paying, and that's what we call. But remember, this is not an accrual-based system, it's an invoice checking system. You can only start to check an invoice if it's already there, and you can start to check as to what happened. The challenge that we had was that invoices were coming into the department and would disappear without a trace. Now that as soon as the invoice walks in, it gets locked on, it starts to follow the chain, and you can at any given point in time determine what's happened to that invoice. The challenge is, and that's where the ERP system comes, is what you do with those that are not in the system. And once you have your proper procurement system, you'll be able to know what has happened before with those things that are commitments and liabilities that are outside of the system that you may not, or anybody has not come and presented invoices related to this. So this old system that we had was, you had invoices all over the country and people are collecting these invoices, and how we are managing this was that now, as soon as you collect an invoice, you have a template, an Excel sheet, punch in the invoice, and then it gets sent to the national office, and then we do the consolidation, broken down to the picture, blah, blah, blah. It was a very difficult thing, and never been one. And then we moved, and hence we developed this Reapatal system, which is web-based. So each and every office has got access to it. It's web-based. At our registry, as soon as an invoice comes in, it gets locked onto the system as to who the service provider is, what the service was for, the date of the service, and who is the actual project manager or person responsible for that in the department.
and discuss escalations. Now you need to approve and confirm this and authentic you what moves to the next level. It's like, so that's what you've introduced to assist us with the tracking of the invoices. So yes, again, let's just a little recap. We are moving towards a gap around this here. Also, like, even this tutorial kind of thing as well that talks to how this online invoice tracking system works. So on the registry, the invoice is captured and the invoice is allocated to a person. And then the person, just on the escalation, has to verify the invoice, and that would be by the line function, supply chain management function, and our compliance unit into its terminal support the payment and disbursement system. And then we capture the payment details at the time of payment, and then what it does as well, it gives us at any given point in time the aging of the invoices, as to how old have the invoices been used. And behind the details, we created a dashboard, which is a dashboard for purposes of management oversight and review of what's happening. And these dashboards, they have summary reports that at any given point in time, the EG can lift it and press the finger and determine what status of our invoices in the whole country, and which office is actually responsible, and which manager or official is actually holding up. So it can give us all this kind of information, and with that, in a sense, can provide, which is something that we might have in the past, the whole issue around consequence management in the sense of people not coming up and providing, issuing the invoices. So people are holding on to invoices for all various reasons. Number one, maybe they don't like the person. Number two, maybe, as you normally say, looking for a commission or whatever, you know, kind of thing. So it's all a lot of reasons that happen that people are not actually coming forth and providing the information as we have. Slide 17 is just a continuation of the invoice tracking system to indicate what we've done, and I'm not going to get to it. Now, when you look at the TNT ICT environment that you are striving towards, and pardon me for going so much into the level of detail of the ICT environment, because I think it's so important to be able to contextualize the entire process of invoices, because we need to be in the country. So on your right-hand side, on slide 18, you've got all the transactional systems, and all the systems have got to do with our property management function as well as our structure. And these systems are modules, which is all Archibus, if you look at, will be interfaced to a SAFE system, and the SAFE system will then be in a position to give us an output, which is your graph reports that you need to have, your general ledgers, your whatever, every little detail that you need, including the status of this invoice. So just to put on slide 19, we are saying, from a PMT environment, you've got a property management function, you've got a facilities management function, you've got a project delivery management system. And all of these things have got a bearing on your asset register. So all of this goes and talks and gets to one point, is the ability for you to update your asset register. Update them through the acquisition, that you go out and buy property. Or update your asset register due to the construction work that you're doing. As soon as the work is complete, the building is done. It's a complete finished product, it must be in the register, we call it. So all of this gets onto the survey. And then for us to be able to do the work as the back office of accountants, you need this as everything regular asset register. When you pay your property rates, you need your asset register to be able to say the payment is attached to this property code. When you do your maintenance, you need to have everything is around the register. So the main important information repository is your asset register, and that's that whole interface that is happening that you need to do. And you've got to hook this asset register, which we actually have completed, and I know we came during the annual report presentation. We actually have this register on Archibus. The only thing that you do, because of the lack of the operational systems that are still not yet in place or brought up, we do the updating of the asset register on Excel. Not that the asset register is on Excel, but in this. So we need to, as soon as we've done the operational system, this will be running quite smoothly. So in terms of just a recap of like 20, like we said, the PMT users generally accept accounting principles, And then we, for us to be able to use the systems and develop and come up with the rolling out of a gas system, you will get National Treasury approval. We receive that approval, we back to roll out this gas system to facilitate the ease of our management of our work. The choice of the ERP system was an Acibus, which provides for the management system for the real estate management solution, the infrastructure management solutions, and an FM, so facilities management solution. And all of this will be interfaced to a financial system called Sage. And that Sage system will provide for an accounts receivable, budgeting, and the main points that are relevant to this topic of today, your accounts payable system, because the 30-day payment has to do with your accounts payable, and the procurement module, which includes purchasing, purchase order, invoice tracking, amongst others. And like you said, this is actually this Acibus interfaces into the Sage for seamless integration, so we can then move on. The next is just the picture of that, and I will just move on to the next slide, on slide 22. On slide 22, I think just the bottom part of the slide 22 is that, or just at the top, the procurement module, we met Sage in the production in 2015. However, only the finance module being active. The procurement module, which includes purchasing, as I just indicated, has not yet been implemented. We are in the process of doing that. The current Sage procurement module has basic functionalities. However, these functionalities need to be customized to cater for government discard procurement processes. Remember, government and our SCM process, government, that pretty much discard this whole chain of events that needs to happen before you get to a particular point. So you buy the Sage procurement system off the shelf. It has a basic functionality of purchase order or raise the requisition order, raise the dual goods receipt loads and pay the invoice. But for us to be able to use it, we will customize it for our purposes. And especially given the fact that we've got a very specific customization around the SCM that we use to government. And then in addition to that, over and above the fact that we'll customize it for government, we also in the PMTD have to consider how we cater for the different procurement or SCM streams that we have given the nature of our business. We are procuring goods and services, such as pens and pencils, which is what every system prescribes. However, we've got a massive portfolio of leasing. And leasing, when you procure leased property, it is not like you procure pens and pencils, and that's what we need to be amending the procurement system to talk to that requirement on the leasing of properties. In addition to that, we procure infrastructure projects through construction projects. Also, that's very unique and peculiar to the environment. It is just not the norm. So yes, there's a lot of customization that we have to offer to the off-the-shelf procurement system that we bought, and that's the process that we are undertaking. And when you think about the two special areas peculiar to public this year, the procurement of infrastructure projects, those are also pretty much being now regulated by National Treasury. And the first guidelines in terms of this came out on the 1st of April of this year. And now we have to adjust ourselves to be in that. Just going on to just a broad rollout plan of the ERP system, just so the members can say, well, it's all great and okay to see what you're trying to do, but what's the plan of when are you going to do this? The modules that will go live in October and November through the piloting of three projects. Once those have successfully been done, we will then roll out the system. And the regions that want to pilot this is Victoria, Joseph, and Nelson. Victoria, because of the lot of transactions, and Joseph also, and Nelson. And the modules that we're going to be putting forth is the reactor maintenance. And I think this is where the actual challenge we have with the region is the reactor maintenance. Around the call center, Google assets, the Google assets. And the modules that will go live to the 1819, of course, we're going to do a lot of customization. And that is a purchase model module, the lease management, preventative maintenance, and project management. These are highly specialized, highly complex, and you're going to have to world out. We've then given a much more of a breakdown from page 26 of the detail. The Google has a register, project activity, we do user training during November, and we can say clearly that the register is migrated to Article 26. And again, maybe to underscore the point, everything within the property management training entity is highly dependent on the Google as a register. And if we can get the Google as a register right, I think we're on the right track. And to roll out an ERP of a operation that is so complex and detailed, we've got to be sure before we actually migrate to the ERP system that things are correct. Because if one mistake you do and you are running payments, and in that month you end up with duplicate payments, you can imagine how they perpetuate themselves. Or if you end up in a situation where you actually can't make the payment, and in the next months when you try to actually migrate, that the payments will not be done, it was just a little clip in the system. That created, you know, chaos in the country. So we've got to be very meticulous to see as to how we do it. And then the reactive management in the call center, because most of the work that happens in breaking, you get locked onto a call center and then react to that. We've done the user acceptance test in November and January, and I think 3 months thereafter we'll be okay. The Google assets, not much of a problem, I think we'll be almost okay there. The big one is the construction project. Like I said, we've got 3,000 construction projects, and these are the ones that have a direct impact on our as a register as well to do that. So we're looking 2018 February to December 2018, the cost of the contract to do that, we'll see we can put it down. And then the preventive maintenance, which is almost similar to the construction project, along the same lines of November 2018. The lease management. This actually the bulk of the work that we've done on the lease management. What we are currently doing now is to pilot leases. And this is the leases that we are giving up. The lease module is for the leases that we are giving to our client departments when they use our own buildings, so that we look at them and manage this problem. But more important is the leases that we procure from the private sector on the other hand. So as public works as a PMT, we're sitting in the middle. On the one hand, we are the lessor, because we have this property we give it to the client department. On the other hand, we are the lessee, because we are the contracting party for the private sector to get entered into the leases. So you've got to manage this function quite meticulously. And that's the module that we talked about. I think that is the environment that I wanted to, you know, paint, so that we can see where we locate this challenge of 30 days payment and how we can overcome it after having understood the environment and also having a sense of where we want to get to. And our members can then give us work on thinking as to whether we're in the right direction or we are veering off course. On slide 17, we are just giving what I want to call, that now we are giving the data analytics on the PMTE. And we chose the PMTE because I've indicated to you that in the main boat, there is not much in terms of 30-day payments problem. We actually don't have an issue there. We pay on time, and the nature of payments are like travel agents or whatever, which are fairly contractual arrangements that we have. The big one is the PMTE. So we're going to share with you the data analytics of PMT in terms of the day payment situation. And the first slide on slide 27 is just a snapshot of what it is. And if you look at it, we've taken a snapshot for the period right up to the end of September 2017. We said, how many invoices have we paid ever since? Paid within 30 days. That's about 24,000 invoices. And the value of those invoices was 4.7 billion, right? And how many invoices have we paid outside of 30 days? It's about 13,000 invoices, made about 551. So those are paid. And yes, some are paid outside of 30 days problem, but at least they're paid. The challenge is the unpaid, as you can see there. There's 15,000, that's at the end of there's 15,282 unpaid invoices, which is a total amount of 901 million rand. And then there's the total invoices, and you can see the breakdown as you have it there. And then we started taking the unpaid invoices and said, of the 15,282 invoices at the bottom, those are unpaid. How much, how many of those are current and how many are non-current, which are more than 30 days old? And if you look at it from the 15,000 invoices, 6,700 are unpaid, which are unpaid, are current, which means they are not a problem because they are within the date of 30 days. Unpaid is 8,566. In terms of quantum, the current invoices that are unpaid were 506 million rand. And unpaid ones that are outside of 30 days, there's 394 million rand of invoices that are unpaid, total number of 8,566 invoices. And that's where the 15,282 unpaid invoices comes. We just unpack it further for the rent. And then what we've done is we've just taken again another statistic that should assist in evaluating this this matter. From April up to August, we're just showing the pay within 30 days, month for month. So that it's not a one, it's not a at a particular time, just over the month, just to see how we're doing and pay outside of 30 days. And then you can see the statistics there. So overall, we have 4,000 invoices of 4.7 billion rand are paid in 30 days. 13 are paid outside of 30 days, 531. And the total payment is 5.6 billion rand that we've done. That's the impact that you can say we have on the economy over the past 6 months. And all these figures are important to Treasury. And we started an extensive project to ensure that all numbers are correctly disclosed on the system is unpaid. And further system enhancements will be implemented on the invoice tracking system to automate updating of payments as they are made. It's a very important thing. And if you go to the next, it just shows a tutorial graph that shows the trend of where we are. And like you can see, this is 85% number of invoices paid in 10 days. And outside the trends, as you can see, value. You can also see the trends, 11.9% of the invoices. I'm not going to get into the detail of the, or maybe just on the right side, in the period April to September 2017, the number of payments within 30 days of qualifying invoices was 5%. And then there's 87,000 invoices, 5.3 billion, out of a total invoices received of 103, which is about 6.1 billion. Right? Then fluctuations in the number of invoices paid from 84% in April to 91% in September is due to the higher number of invoices older than 30 days being settled. So we actually started the process of settling old invoices, as you can see the upsurge in the percentage that we've done. In general, value of invoices paid is consistent at 94% but went down to 91% in September to more than 30 days, hence the high number of invoices for 30 days. So we went into the old invoices and started to try to settle them. That's the reason why then your numbers would be affected there. The payment levels remain low due to the fact that each month all the backlog invoices for 30 days have been settled. So that's a targeted approach energy on settling old invoices. And then once the backlog stuff like that, and then in terms of the pay outside of 30 days, what makes up the, what's the nature of the services that we receive to show that, or where the problems are? We've got, as I said, the different expense items, day-to-day, municipal services, sundry, and two contracts. And when you look at it, in terms of the number of invoices, the biggest number is our day-to-day. And that's where our subcontractors doing the small works, changing valves, fixing up plumbing work and all that. So it's about 7,000 invoices that to the tune of 102 million rand. Then municipal services, that's about 1,800 and all those are small ones. But the bulk of it is actually our digital. And unpaid invoices. That are the paid outside of 30 days. Unpaid invoices. That remain unpaid. Again, if you look at it, you can see it's day-to-day maintenance. The sundry bears, this is sort of the logistics, those are not an issue, that's all things internally. But But the big one is a day-to-day offsetting work, which is part of the other business, which are unpaid. And that's what our focus should be in terms of settlement of business. And then we did, what we did is we took all those invoices and to determine how old are the invoices that are paid in the system. If you look at the slide, it goes from April right up to September. And the total at the bottom, the people that you can all see this problem, and the total at the bottom there, this indicates the breakdown of the invoices, how old they are. So of the 15,218, that one at the bottom, 15,282 invoices that are sent, 2,150 relate to prior years, if you see the top number. And the ones that relate to outstanding since April is 126, and the ones that are outstanding since May is 1,000, the ones that have been outstanding since June is 770, the ones outstanding since July is 1,739, and the ones in August, 2,518, and September, 2,716, which is current. So that's the breakdown of the age. So the concern for us, all of us, and that's the focus and the priority, is to deal with the ones that are coming back from the previous year, the 2,130. In actual fact, from the ones that are going from July upwards, up until prior, that's the problem that we need to focus our attention. And there's a number of reasons why that is happening. So we can expect just now. And then the next slide just shows the complicated same information, but just in a different way in the graph form. I think the easy one is to look at that one that I've communicated. Now, we're getting on to the challenges of why is this thing happening the way it's happening. I think the one thing that you've identified, over and above, you know, the operating context and all of this stuff that I've communicated, is that our SCM, the SCM system is government, is such a complex system, which has makes a number of assumptions that you have a core of your service providers, core of officials who understand the system, and that's where it comes from. And it's not necessarily it's very, very complex. And it requires extensive amounts of supporting documentation, like in compliance with your occupational health issues, requirements, technical requirements that are there, you know, job cards, sign off, do your just cube reports when you've done some work, you can do a geotechnical analysis. So it's very complex, but you have a very unsophisticated, you know, historic before we can get to this highly sophisticated thing. We come from a system where it's so far to do that. Now we've got this very complex system, so that's why we are where we are in terms of this kind of thing. And yet, we can say and we. There is no university that takes students and say you do a BCom and what you're studying is government here and there's a specialized qualification. You something that you go into government and learn as you go and as you move, and that's why it is. I think things are changing now that we've started engaging with Institutes of Ireland, that the system needs to be part of the curriculum to prepare, you know, graduates for the environment that we're in. And then there's issues about the contracting methodologies. I mean, your JVCC, your CIDB requirements, your professional office, all of those things, highly complex, but difficult to get it right. And not everybody is compliant. And by then, the person has done the work and what you do, but come for your paper, that this compliance is proven. So it's that kind of thing that happens. Technical validations required prior to legal certifications are included in that kind of application, so council testing on what the geotechnical kind of work is. And then there's also the thing of people get to work, and while they are there, the scope just changes while they are there, you know. And it's like you go there to fix up a light bulb, and as you have to fix up the light bulb, the plumbing works collapses as you are busy there. And the guy's a general fix up man. And he just goes and does it and comes back as well. I'm also claiming for the plumbing works as well. there was never part of what you gave him to do, and that he could start from there. You cut the throat. And then we also had previous challenges with respect to reporting and payments of suppliers that we're using manual export systems, which I think I've articulated pretty much quite extensively, and how we try to move away from that with the introduction of the apartheid system. And then on slide 37, I think there's some sort of challenges that we can touch on, invoices and the environment there was there. There are many gates of entry for invoices. And I think if you look at that aging analysis that I gave for 1,000, 2,900 invoices that come from prior, it's precisely because of this kind of thing that I was indicating. Then there were many gates of entry for invoices. And once that happens, there is no single point of accountability to be able to follow through this. Now we can produce a central and suppliers know that from now on we can't be giving an invoice to the act. It has to come to this place, which is registered. There was no invoice registered to check out the invoice checking system. There was just this general culture of non-compliance and official. And I think we be very consistent with that. Like I said, people are holding invoices and not submitting them for all various reasons. And just because they had other objectives. And that cultural non-compliance was so inculcated for us to be checking out. It takes quite a bit of time. And part of the interventions of that, the ministerial roadshows to address staff in this matter, gain momentum as well. The integrity of the information being tracked, I think there was just no standard reporting, and people were just doing this, talking reports, and so you could not consolidate all of those things. And then submission of non-compliance invoices by suppliers, I think, talks to the complexity of the SCM requirements and system, and that people were not just compliant, which is providing compliant invoices. Compliant invoices is an invoice that has to have certain things, and in most cases we do not have those things. And then long outstanding open orders, we just decided to go on a corrective view of purchase orders issues, so that we would. And what are our interventions? We've spoken about the Reapatala system on slide 39. I'm not going to get into that again. And what are the other interventions that we are doing with respect to this? I think one thing that we can say is that we have, because of the focus attention on this, it is improving. And it's improving, and over and above that, the information that is sitting on the system that we are now tracking is much more credible information. So you know what you're working on. And I think that's really what one can take comfort in. So the other interventions that you speak to, like your ministerial roadshows to address staff as well as providers within the regions and things. And when this happens, when the minister goes to a region, what we do, we set up help desks and everything instantly. And this will continue post visits and a lot of the challenges and the mountains, etc. But in most cases, and in a lot of cases, you actually find that some of the things are just not legitimate. And the people, as soon as you start to engage fully, they actually disappear out of the system and never come. And that's what happens. One of the things that we do is that the 30-day payment is a standing item of our agenda, of our country. Mentor, which we report to on an ongoing basis. And just a mentor and mentor in our mentor structure, we build a profile of the whole public sector on the 30-day payments and the whole country view of the sector on this. We have a CFO forum that deals with the senior technical level of CFOs, which CFO of National Public Works Chair, and this is a matter that gets dealt with extensively. We started an accruals project. As you know, accruals in government is a major issue to verify the validity of invoices in the day-to-day expense, which is ongoing. I think that's where we have payment levels as well as unpaid invoices are submitted to National Treasury on a monthly basis and regularly to the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation. And then we had a session a couple of months ago. was the department ourselves and the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, and the extended invitations that they were there, just from GTI, Department of Small Business, and the DPSA, specifically to look at, because at that time, it was just like Public Works is one of the two departments with respect to this matter. And now we dealt with this, and I think ever since, you could see the improvements of this. I think I've come to the conclusion of my presentation and recommend that the Fulham Committee knows the complex operating environment of the health team and scale, the current ICT environment and its impediments to achieve prompt payment supplies in this current PMC ICT roadmap to improve third-day payments and roll out the RFP and the report on the status of the third-day payments. Thank you.
Okay, we'll check if there's any addition by any of yourself, whether from PMC or from the department itself. The DM is free to enter anytime you feel like, maybe in the end, maybe anytime you think you must come in, you are free to come in. Any addition from officials?
No addition, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. From GM, we still fine.
Yeah, ma'am.
Thank you. We'll then allow Honorable members to then ask questions of clarity, comment, and so you're really free to interrogate the report. So, Honorable Sundane, I've noted you. Okay, maybe let me start before that you note your numbers. Honorable Mjabo, you will be the first to bring the eyes. And there's a gentleman who's taking chances. I think he has won. He'll be number two. Mr. Fildane, he'll be three. Honorable Fildane, three. Honorable Adams, you will be four. Ms. Matera, you have okay. Our card number five would be Mr. Ryder. I'm checking hands. Mr. Peek, six. You will be number seven. You will close. If you Freddy, Whip, you don't have your hand. You're fine. Okay. So Honorable Matero will close. Thank you very much. Honorable Joe.
You are much Thank you.
when you talk about public works, uthila khona emakhaya, especially kwamasipala. But if ubuka I report the way we write ngakhona detailed talk to us as members of parliament, but vis-a-vis ukukhuluma straight emakhaya, is it possible now? Ngoba omasipala, I'm not sure ukuthi bayavumelana bangavuma 100% ngale presentation. Ngoba the reason ngihaeneukuthiazibhatala inkonzo zomasipala and i-report ibekanje ukuthi bayakubhatala for i-services zamasipala, yet abomasipala abavumi always complaining about i-public sector ama-department not paying i-services zabo. Number two, ngale issue yama-application, maybe noba kungabhalwa phansi, but when it comes to presentation time, WCS, TMIS, naleye yama-invoices, ukuthi if banama-invoices babhathele maybe 15,200 nama, maybe must be break down ukuthi according to provinces. Ukuthi in this province I understand the national office, but that indication would indicate that then this is the
Thank you
very much. Number two. Thank you, Chair, and it's a great pleasure to be joining your committee this morning. And thank you to the CFO for your presentation, very enlightening. Just a couple of questions and comments, if I may. The first thing is, has the department set itself targets as regards payment within 30 days, and how do these targets relate to the regulations that have been put together by the GPME? As you know, the GPME has been going on about this for a couple of years now, and I'm glad to see that the Public Works Department has taken this seriously.
Previous stats don't give us any indication of what the level of improvement is, but maybe you could just also give us some indication of that. It would be interesting also to know what the size of the businesses that you are paying. In other words, have you got any information on the breakdown of the size of your suppliers? Are they big businesses, small businesses? Are the big or the small businesses being better or worse paid, if you get the drift? Because obviously a small business, cash flow is a critical matter. And you're still working at roughly 30% of your invoices not being paid either on time or not being paid at all. And it would be interesting to know if that's particularly affected small businesses. The issue you pointed out, which I could summarize as red tape versus accountability, is clearly an issue. You know, government money needs to be preserved and not wasted, but that does involve a fair amount of bureaucratic procedures and follow. And I'd just like to comment on whether you think you've got the balance right within the department, or whether you think that there are bureaucratic processes and procedures that could be simplified to make it easier for small businesses in particular to comply. I'd like your comments, if you wouldn't mind, on the regulations that were gazetted in 2015 by the Construction Industry Development Board. I know that's not necessarily relevant to your department per se, but it does fall under Public Works. I believe that those regulations were gazetted by the Department of Public Works. As far as I'm aware, they haven't actually been implemented, but if you could possibly, maybe the Deputy Minister could also comment on that. Could you also maybe outline a bit about the interactions you have had with the Department of Small Business Development? Obviously, that's my interest in particular. And then finally, it's really off the topic, but pertinent to, in view of the Minister of Finance budget speech last week, has the department had any discussions with Treasury about the liquidation of some of these vast assets under the under the department's control to help pay off the deficit. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Number three.
Thank you, Chair. Welcome to the presentation. Slide six. Department's role. You do not list the department as an implementer, but rather more of an overseer. I suppose the reason for that is because you expect PMTE to actually implement. Now, I've got serious concerns about that when you play yourselves offside, because we don't deal here with PMTE, we deal with the department. So this is a worrying statement for you to say that the department is an overseer, policy maker, and so on. Correct as it may, but to me it's worrying to have a public statement going out to say the department is under the definition of the space of the department does not include implementation. As much as you have got this week, PMTE to do that. But, so I'd like to get your comments on that, why you think you are going. That statement would be taken kindly by the public. Because the public may not be aware that you've got PMTE. But once the department makes a public statement to say this is an area of operation, then this works on to me. Slide 7. Maintenance. 0.8 value. Emergency. 1.3 billion. For me, it looks like it should have been the other way around. This speaks to your, what to me appears to be poor planning. It looks like you position yourselves to do emergency work rather than routine maintenance, even as you budget is about half, more or less, 45%. Why would you plan to spend 1.3 billion on emergencies and less for routine maintenance, especially given the fact that the agent reported that you do not appear to have a steady program of maintaining state assets. Now, maybe perhaps this explains why you do not have, why the AG was drawn to that conclusion. And we haven't had you, you know, challenge that, even with this presentation. We thought I had expected that you would come up with a counter argument against the AG's founding, you know, statements to the effect that you do not appear to have a program for maintaining. And you know as much as I do that a whole lot of government properties, buildings in particular, are in a very, very poor state of repair. Secondly, I believe that once you get to that emergency, there are all sorts of unavoidable additional costs that are involved. By the time the water is running down, there's a lot of water that has been lost, there's more damage, whereas perhaps if there was a routine maintenance program, you could have prevented that, so to speak. Why is your budgeting so skewed? That's my crisp question. Slide 8, the ratio, 1 to 20. I know that it's not the first time you have been transparent about this, having run a couple of projects myself, the complexity of running a project, especially ones who involve regulation and communities, because it's not uncommon for a project manager to have to do 2, 3, 4 meetings hammering on the same point when you're dealing with communities. This one will attend today, another one is present, critical one is not in, document is not signed, and so forth. What agent steps are you taking to narrow down that ratio? And what is your comment about the fact that your, I don't know whether you call them regional district officers, say that they have got less involvement in the value of your projects to the extent of not even knowing. This is the comment that we got when we were in Mchata last month. I know some of the officials were present. You know, and they say they are less involved in the value of the projects. That is the officials themselves. Things are being done straight from head office. And I think your casual remark to the fact that indeed Pretoria is very busy confirms what they said. So you've got a bunch of officials who are sitting there not involved in the procurement, in the assessment, in the implementation, in the monitoring of projects.
and you still have got this high ratio, which is practically, you know, impossible, you know, to manage, you know, it just cannot be. Running a project is no child's play. There's my team. Locality, localization is very scarce. Those distances, you know, where this is a critical matter. Because this goes with jobs, with what the department perceives to be doing. Hence, I would agree with my colleague that indeed municipalities just do not seem to be happy with the way you handle it. Of course, was speaking from a financial perspective. But indeed, you know, where there is hardly any visible and meaningful, you know, engagement by the department at local. I've spoken about the regional offices. Now we're talking, you know, where localization of services, and yet you are public works. So my first tip, critical in the modern world. Are service providers able to log on to your system to be able to check their invoices? If not, why is that not the case? Because nowadays, even if you submit a claim with an insurance company, you can just log on. If you're selling property, ordinary attorneys give you, you know, where, you know, a system whereby you can trace how far the transfer of your property is. I'm talking about ordinary conveyances, not a whole department. One should be able nowadays to be able to just log into the system and see that the invoice I submitted on the test, you know, after 10 days, it is at this stage, it is actually a station number. So even if for confidentiality, the name of the person who is dealing with the invoice is not revealed, but at least it's gone through this stage. That's part of the education that we expect you to be, you know, to be sharing with the service providers. And it's easy to catch the service providers. Once you have done your contracting, you should be able to say to them, this is how we handle this. Instead of having officials having to answer the phone and maybe not giving accurate information, that's the system that we should be using. Because I guess this system has cost you millions. My next question. Still going to answer that. How many people deal with a single invoice? I think that's critical for Parliament to know. I submit my invoice for 120,000 rands. How many people will handle that invoice? And why is it that number? I don't know if it's 5 or 20. Why is it that number? Is that the correct number of people that are handling it? Remember, the topic of the day is payment within 30 days. I'm most disturbed by a statement to the effect that, on slide 35, to the effect that, no, slide 36, to the effect that the system is unable to identify the official who is dealing with a supplier's invoice. How could you, as a department, procure a system that conceals such critical information, when we know that it is actually officials that process payments in time or fail to process payments in time? The topic of the day is payments within 30 days. You come and tell us that your system, for which you paid money, that speaks to your SM, is unable to put a finger on an official who is responsible for a deadly cause. This has got a tremendous impact on the economy of the country. Minister of Finance told us about a gap of 50 billion last week, Wednesday. And this is one of the things that killed the economy of the country. That was what officials were sitting there short where they appeared on the 15th and are not able to say who is responsible for not paying me. Remember, service providers and care expenses. In the entire department, you are not able to say who is responsible for delaying my payment of 120,000 rands. What are you going to do about it? That's the question. How soon can you fix this? This is a big gap. Last question. So then, slide 23. By what percentage will your payment efficiency improve once the new systems are in place? My understanding is that you will do monitoring and evaluation of your own systems, and you properly come to the conclusion that we need to improve. Now at that time, as a project manager, because that becomes a little project, you say, if we were to purchase or procure this system, we will have the pleasure of improving our payment efficiency by X percentage. By what percentage that you roll out in October and November will your payment efficiency improve? It's your function as a CFO to tell us that. Otherwise, we might have to ask, what is the wisdom of procuring the system if you do not know the percentage by which the payment efficiency will improve? Please, the reckless, you see, the fundamental cause, this is slide 35, of slow payments is the sophisticated or complex system. Why did the department procure a complex system that results in problems? Why? We want to know. Why did you procure a system that complicates and therefore compromises the very purpose of which the system has been charged? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable President. Noting what Honorable Njobo indicated that we didn't arrange interpreters, I would request that Honorable members, if we can use the English where we can, so maybe next time we must think about the interpreters. Mrs. Adam.
Thank you, Chairperson. I didn't realize I was setting a challenge for some of my colleagues. But I try in my poor English to, and she can try in her poor English too.
It's a nice English, I like
it. Chairperson, I want to thank the department for the presentation, especially my colleague and the presenter that's also from the Northern Cape. My first question, Chairperson, I'm into equity.
I must agree, the presenter was very eloquent. Very convincing.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure about Northern Cape.
But Chairperson is very eloquent and really is an asset, I think. Not I think, I know. But I'm into equity and I would like the department acting DG and DS to have a more broader representation with regard to gender. It's one of our challenges to the democracy that we want females to have higher position in management, and which we should always reach that. We can't let this go. Chairperson, I'd like Mr. Saptani covered a lot,
yeah.
Really a lot of my questions. But on slide 7, I'd like to know, when you say day-to-day emergency maintenance, what do you categorize as emergency? Is there a list, according to you, what emergency entails? Then, Chairperson, on the same slide, the second bullet, last bullet, reads leases private, 4.3 billion, 3,200 active leases. Where's the lease action? And what is the opposite word for active? Inactive? And the old program name is Mia Pachala. Now, unfortunately, I'm a total innovator. I'm a language teacher. In some instances, it is spelled as one word. In other instances, such as on slide 33, it's two words. Now you must decide. Okay. Let's just listen on page slide 11, slide 8. They say, Mr. Tortani covered me on that, 1 to 20 project is the ratio of project manager to project. Now, project and project, some are small, some are bigger. How do you allocate that? So that it's an equal spread. And do you think, from your human resource department, this is enough? Isn't it too much for one person? And then chairperson, they say there is 11 regional offices located. Regional by regional, I understand they fall under the head office. Now, what is the function of your provincial offices? If there is such a lot of work, 1 to 20 projects, how do the regional the provincial offices fit into this work? I know there's concurrency function. And do you think this function of concurrency is helping you as a national department? Now, why do you say no satellite offices closer to the service point? Why there at any stage satellite offices? And if it was, why isn't there any satellite offices? If it can help with the payment of the within the 30 days. Yeah, chairperson, I think I covered that of the many projects. I want to know, chairperson, on slide 16. The presenter said there is a dashboard which the acting DG can trace how far work is done. I want to know how often does the acting DG or the DG visit this, and what impact does his visiting of this dashboard have on the completion of the work? Is there any consequence management when a project is not where it should be if there is a dashboard? Because I see a car dashboard in front of me. Mm. If there goes on a red light, I must know something is wrong.
Yeah.
I must check it. Mm. So, what's the function of this dashboard? If it can enhance the work of the project, the finishing of the project, to see where the time for stopping is. You can trace it. What are you doing about it? And how often do you do it, and what do you do with it that you see there? That's on the dashboard. Then, chairperson, on slide 22, the presenter said the current page procurement module has basic functionality. Basic functionality. That means it isn't focused or zoomed into the functionalities of the department. That's how I read it. And what are you doing about it? You say SAGE has been in production since 2015. You must have found some challenges. What have you done? It's 2 years. Almost 3 years since then. And you said National Department of Treasury issued guidelines from the 1st of April 2017. Have you implemented some of those guidelines? How effective are they? The thing is, Jefferson, the presenter made an accusation here. Let's go to that one first. And he said the supply chain management is a very complex system. Mm. Now, I know the supply chain management, the rules are issued by National Treasury. Now, have you spoken to National Treasury with regard to the challenges? Because supply chain managements are there, but they should be fit for purpose for each department, I think. Not deviating from, but it should be fit for purpose for a department, such as public works, that has a large scope of work. Now, if you've spoken to them with regard to that. Now, Chairperson, on slide 23, the high-level ERP implementation, this call center, let us say here, how effective are you? Do you monitor their effectiveness? And Chairperson, on page 24, there are two bullets, the last two, that say that there are a 3-month pilot from when? Till when? Is that November to January? Tomorrow is November for the reactive maintenance and call center. Is everything in place for the pilot? Because today is the 31st of October. So is everything in place for that? Then, Chairperson, lease management. We know our department is the offense for all government buildings. And this should be on date, on the point, should be done very, very good. So that we can have leases paid to nothing. Chairperson, then on page, I talked about the STM complexity of that. On page slide 35. The complexity of the supply chain management process. You talk about potential disputes. Slide 35. Scope changes while on site by either the client or unilaterally by third providing, resulting in potential disputes. How many are there? And what are the outcome of these disputes? Who does the dispute, the releasing of? Who comes in as a third person? Then, Chairperson, I think Honorable Sultan covered the one there. Invoices not directly sent to registry by service providers. Now tell me, if you have a project manager, 1 to 20 projects, if I am a service provider, if I am a contractor, what is the route? Do I know what to do? Must I give it to my service provider? What do I do? Then, Chairperson, there are ministerial roadshows to address staff on the matter on paying invoices on time. Is that really the job of the minister? When we have chief directors and GG, chief directors, DDGs. The minister is a political animal here. He should work where work isn't done. But administratively, I don't agree with that one. There the DG must come in my view. But may let it be as it be, what is the impact of him? Of these roadshows. And the supply of desk in the regional offices. What is the impact? What is the relationship between these regional offices and the provincial offices? Is there a good relationship? think that this is the last one. Yes, but thank you for that.
Thank you very much, Honorable Patricia Adams. That was quite a good teacher English. So we understood it very, very well.
Thank you.
So can we hear Honorable Radam?
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I'm going to start on slide number 6, if I may. Just to point out, the CFO, and yes, congratulations on your presentation. I'm more used to CFOs being financial people in grey suits or grey dresses and timid when they present. So when someone presents with such certainty and assurance, I'm a bit concerned.
The answer is he is from Northern Cape.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Chair, for setting the record straight. Good. The CFO spoke about the complexity and the difficulty of the systems and getting around it, and the fact that we've got a 74 or 84, we'll get to that just now, percentage hit rate. I just want to point out that payments within 30 days are something that is not new, so something that we've been aiming at for quite some time. And the first number that we see on slide 6 is compensation of employees, and that's a big number. There are people that are earning big salaries, and I just want to make sure that we are holding people accountable for the earning of their salaries. Are people actually doing their jobs, and are they being held to account? So that was the first thing that I wanted to speak about. The next one, we go to slide 8, and we talk about the ratio of project managers overseeing projects. I think 1 to 20 is a big ask, especially considering the scope of some of these projects and also the vast geographical size that has been covered. What I wanted to ask in this, and Chair, this is mostly because of the fact I'm getting used to the portfolio, so I just want to know where does an entity like Kucha Development Corporation sit? They sit, I know they're state owned. Do they sit under this department? And, you know, I know they have project managers, etc., in them, and do they then report up to a single project manager further up the queue? And then I know Kucha is largely focused on the Eastern Cape, and are there other similar entities around the country? That's my next question. Good. We can then move on to slide 11, which is quite interesting. I note that from the different regional offices, the one area that's missing is the Northern Cape. And I note that the Northern Cape has got the largest land mass and probably the smallest population. Are we as a department not represented there? Just to clarify on that one. Then, picking up on what Honourable Adam said, talking about concurrent accountability and the confusion that's created through this, I just wanted to know, who decides who's accountable for what? And I'm using my two frames of reference, one being Gauteng, where I live, and the other being the Eastern Cape, where we were recently on oversight, where one should take note that in Gauteng, the provision of school buildings and premises is the provincial department's accountability. Yet in the Eastern Cape, the national department is taking accountability and ownership of a lot of the schools and school premises. So what's the difference? Who decides? Is someone stepping on someone else's turf? If someone can just point me in the right direction there. I think it's important that we know who does what, because again, you know, we have a reputational issue here, and it was spoken about by my colleague here on my left, spoke about the perceptions of municipalities, and the perception of businesses, big and small as well, is that public works is die varken die verhaal. We have a bad reputation as public works, and is that entirely the fault of the national department, or is it the provincial department? also impacting. And then look at slide 15, Ria Patala. Congratulations, it's nice to have something developed in-house. I think that's it looks useful, it looks like it is something that is going to work. When was this implemented? And is it 100% up and running right now? Because I think other than Ria Patala, it should actually be Ria Robetse, because it seems like this is coming at the last hour. So were we sleeping or have we done it already? Okay, good. Slide 27 is of course the important one. This is showing that on your top column, as at 30th of September 2017, 72% of invoices, which is 76% of the value, are paid within 30 days. That's a good number. You just saw that number in the back of the head. Questions, I think Honourable Trance started by saying, you know, what was it last year? What are we comparing ourselves to? It's one thing to present what a number is, but are we better or worse than we were previously? My next question relates to the next line, paid outside of 30 days. Is there some sort of a breakdown that we can have that says 60, 90, 120, etc., so we can get a tracking of you know, are these things being paid? You know, if you miss 30, is the majority sorted out after 60? That is to a certain degree dealt with on one of the subsequent slides, but just as a stock graphic indication would be nice to see paid 30, paid 60, paid 90. Is there a creditor's age analysis was the question. Is there an exception tracking system or an escalation process where if something is not paid after 30 days, is it escalated to somebody in terms of the dashboard with a red flashing light? And is there a separate team that will now come in and find out the reason why? Because I would suggest with the volume of invoices that are being processed by the department, you know, you have a thing called a vanilla invoice, which ticks all the boxes and can go through, and I presume that's dealt with by a group of people that can deal with these things. But as soon as something hits an exception, is it hauled out of the system and given to someone who's got a little bit more time on their hands, who can then go and look for the attachments that are missing, that can go and tick all the boxes, that can make the necessary phone calls to the regional offices or to the supplier to ask them for certain things, or is it left with the same group of people that are inundated with paper? Is there an escalation process? So if something hits a case where okay, this thing's been on my desk now for 60 days, I still can't pay it, am I going to leave it there to languish with the spider webs and wait for me to get time to deal with it, or can I refer it to somebody up the line who might be in a better position to deal with the issues? And then also for suppliers, is there an escalation process? If they want a hearing, are they dealing at the same level every time, going to the same person, or do they have the ability to phone in at a higher level when things start going wrong? The comment about a target was already given. Good, let's look at the very next slide, where we say that the last line of the graph, it says 85% paid within 30 days. And the previous slide we said 72% is paid within 30 days. So my question is the same question that I asked when we were away on oversight, is who's fooling whom? And we can play that song again. Good. And then perhaps just in closing, Chair, is two general comments. I note that there's a new software system coming online. I welcome it. I just want to reiterate a point I made at the previous meeting, that software is not a silver bullet. It's not going to solve all of our problems, and if you haven't heard the phrase garbage in, garbage out, get used to it, because, yeah, if the people within the system are feeding garbage into the system, then the software is not going to solve all your problems. So I welcome the new system. Let's monitor it closely and make sure that it's working. And then just to reiterate the importance of payments within 30 days. You know, when we were on oversight, we were on a site where a clinic had been built and a payment had been delayed for whatever reason. Because that payment was not done within 30 days, it was then not done within 60 days, the supplier then couldn't pay his VAT payment, and then so his VAT clearance certificate expired, or his tax clearance certificate expired. He was then asked to resubmit his tax clearance certificate by the department. Because the department hadn't paid him, he'd lost the tax clearance. Mm. Now, because he couldn't resubmit the tax clearance, we couldn't pay him. Okay, so that's called a vicious circle. And we actually were the architects of our own problems as a department. So just to remember, when we are dealing with money, we are dealing with people's livelihoods, we are dealing with people all the way down the chain. And the importance of your job, you know, it's only numbers, and some of these numbers are really big when we look at them. So when a small number pops on the screen, it might not affect it. But if you are dealing with a small business that's paying contractors, that's paying its workers, you know, we talk about the developmental aspects of the procurement system. People that don't have a lot of capital and they can't carry the workers' salaries for 3-4 months, they're new businesses, they're emerging contractors. If we hold back on payments to these people, we're effectively setting them up for failure. And it is massively important to understand our role. Our role might be in a comfortable office in Cape Town or in Pretoria, sitting behind a computer, punching numbers into the system, but at the end of the day, we really are affecting people's lives, whether it be the contractors or whether it be the people that are getting services from a municipality, and that municipality can't afford to provide those services because Public Works hasn't paid their account for 6 months and they're sitting with a cash flow crisis. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Reader. Honourable Fit.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. By way of introduction, the CFO indicated that this 30-day payment is regulated, and Honourable Chance also mentioned that there's some sort of regulation. So can we get an indication, what is that regulation that prescribes that businesses must be paid within 30 days? Then I've just got some questions for clarification, and I've got some comments as well, starting with slide number 7. Question here would be, firstly, if you speak about the day-to-day emergency maintenance to the tune of 1.3 billion across all assets owned by the state across the country. My question with regards to that is that managed from a central point, or do the clients in the regions have control and management over the rest? Because you don't want a situation where somebody there is a point that a tap is leaking, and then you have to wait for Public Works to be contacted and to set up and send out the tender, and in doing so, the water is gone and under the bridge by the time Public Works arrives. On the same slide, Honourable Chair, the Municipal Services, the third last bullet point, is a substantial amount of 5.3 billion. My question with regards to that is that for the services that we are paying that large amount of money, are all these assets, immovable assets obviously, occupied and in cases where they are leased out, is the rent, or should I say market related rent, received for those assets? If I go over to slide number 7, and Honourable Mutali touched on this one with regards to the project managers, but my question is more specific with regards to this one, is how many project managers are needed, considering that there are 3,600 projects? If I do a quick calculation, it tells us that currently there are 180, but my question is how many are needed, in other words, what is the acceptable ratio? On slide number 10, this Honourable Adams touched on this one to my left. Surely, you know, you have challenges because of the long distances that the office is located to the services, but surely something, a solution, it's an easy, it's a simple solution. Obviously it's cost, so there's always money involved. But I mean, if something is going to negatively affect service delivery, then a decision has to be made. That either we move the office closer or satellite office or something. We cannot say because of money that this service cannot be provided. So it's just something that I would like you to mention. Slide number 13. Now, when I looked at this slide, and I looked at the cash basis and the accrual basis first, I've got one question now with regards to that. Why is there a difference? You see, for ahead, went through some lengths to try and explain that. Secondly, on that same slide, you mentioned that you cannot use systems that are prescribed by National Treasury. I cannot believe that you cannot. Don't you want to? Don't you have capacity? You cannot just not implement something that is prescribed by some higher authority. It's as simple as that. If the Treasury says this is a system, then you're going to have to do that. But my main issue on this slide, and when I, you see, we only got the slide today on the chairperson, so we obviously didn't get an opportunity to go through it. It's fine, I can read, so it doesn't really matter. But when I read slide 13 immediately, when I wrote the purchase requisition, purchase order, goods delivery note, and so forth and so forth. And so I see on slide number 22, that is where CFO passionately explained that we have a new system. Now, and he was very excited about it. This didn't throw me, Honorable Chairperson, with respect to say this, because you see, the accounting system was developed in 1994, and soon thereafter, these systems started being developed. So why in 2015 you get excited about a system that should have been developed a long time ago? That is why Public Works is in this situation. Because if you have this system, if you have that system, it's simple, really, it's not rocket science. That system is the solution to the problems in Public Works. Honorable Ryder also asked the question if there is an exception report yet. That type of a system will reveal if there are any payments that are outstanding outside the 30-day period. So, Honorable Chairperson, I'm not being disrespectful, that is the answer. And it's simple, really. It's an accounts payable system. So, how does so what happens is that you've got your purchase requisition and you have all the documentation. As long as all the documentation is captured, then the payment will be automatically generated. That's just how it works. So, it's simple. The request for goods and services, and ultimately, I mean, I don't want to go through the whole process, but eventually, the time will come when everything which is ordered has been received and then the payment is made. So it's really something that one shouldn't get too excited about. It's really something that should have been done in 1495. Right. If I go further to slide number 15, okay, sorry, that's just the same story with regards to that. Sorry, I'm not here. Slide number 19, just a question here for clarification, and we must give the department credit for the fact that there wasn't an asset register. I think it was 3 years ago, and they've come a long way. They do currently have an asset register. But my question with regards to that is, so how was maintenance done on assets that were disclosed for in the financials for one rand? Surely your maintenance on your assets would probably be based on the value of the assets. I mean, you can't maintain an asset for a million rand if it's only worth one rand. But just a question for how that was managed, just as far as that is concerned. And just a little correction, and I'm sorry to do this, Honorable Chairperson, but that on the top of slide number 20, I'm just passing, so I'll just mention it. Generally accepted accounting principles is actually GAAP, not GRAP. I just saw that, so I thought we just correct that. It's actually generally recognized accounting principles. Sorry about that, CFO. DG didn't hear you. Okay, I'm just two more slides on the other time. On slide number 35, and on the book, we've kind of touched on this one. This is the one that I was talking about. he asked a question and I'm not sure, I also said something here. Okay, this complex system that we're speaking about, again, you know, it cannot be so complex that a human being, it's designed by a human being, it's not designed by the alien, so surely a human being should be able to work on the system. So if you have human resources in the department that cannot, then you need to train them. The CFO was right. You don't go to a university to study a BCom and then you do what happens in government, of course. But surely there should be something in place where your staff is trained. And most of the software service providers do offer training for the different software, for the software anyway. So my question then, and not wanting to be personal, is that is it not, the problem is not that the Honorable Fultani tells me, maybe the problem is that the staff is not equipped enough to be able to be trained. So there's no such thing. He asked the question about why do we source such complicated systems. SAGE is not a complex system, it's the human beings that are not complex enough. And then my last point, Honorable Chair, which is on a general comment from slide, I'm referring to slide number 36, but basically those using a manual Excel system and a Excel spreadsheet, it's problems, and we understand that the department is moving to a more advanced system, but those are problems that have been self-inflicted, and you need to get away from Excel sooner rather than later. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chief. We coming to Mother Honorable.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me also commend to the department for the presentation that they've given this morning. From the look of things, I think in most cases, as we go through all the challenges that we are meeting, one could be maybe because of the vacancy rate that we are having. What is the vacancy rate as you are giving it? And how does it translate into money? Because when you talk about the project managers that are facing the ratio of 1:20, I still remember the first time this was presented to us some years ago, we said the normal ratio could be 1:10. And even today we are still talking of 1:20. What is the problem? Why are we not addressing it? And I still remember in the past we said there are so many students who are graduating year in and year out in this institution of IRN. Why are we not making sure that we have a strategy of getting this learner who can come in maybe as internships and so on, and from there they get into this job and assist us. All these complex things that we are talking about, they are complex to me because I was born before technology. But to those well in the university, it won't be complex. They would have this opportunity for them. But to us, it can be complex. So if you can address that one, honestly speaking, we have a lot of learners who are out there looking for jobs and they are not getting any jobs. On slide number seven, maintenance versus emergency maintenance. I'm sure this is because we have been talking about this also for so many times since I came into this committee. That in most cases, we don't maintain our assets as departments. And that is why we end up having a lot of emergency things. Because as long as the thing is not maintained regularly, we'll have a lot of maintenance on it. And then, don't you have a way of addressing a situation where a person is got there to maintain a particular issue, then the other one is emergency. Is there no other way, any strategy to say, this is what I'm finding here, what must I do, so that it's not coming out as a problem or something that was not planned for, but you are able to address it in a more planned way, in a way. and we also indicated that it is incumbent that in future, that is the time, that time, that we should, when we commission our project, we must already have a plan on the maintenance, so that we move away from a situation where we have projects, we have projects that are being commissioned, but at the end of the day, we don't talk about maintenance until things are falling apart. It's then that you talk about a problem. We can address that one also. The lease issue, still on number 7. There was a presentation to address this issue of leases, which has really taken a lot of attention from the department. How far are we on that one? Because I can see here we still have 4.3 billion that has been paid for leases. The other one is on page, slide number 22. I think they did touch on it, which talks about the sage that was started to be used in 2015, but up to now they're saying you cannot be in the position to track it, or some of the things are not implemented, others has not yet been implemented. Why after such a long time? We are coming to that one again of the type of manpower that we're having, the type of people that we're having. Is it because we are saying it's complex? Why don't you address it? The issue of most of the things have been asked already. Yeah. The complex issue, I did talk about it. Yes. You also talked about the idea, I know some of our member pages talk about it. You are unable to identify the official responsible for the delay of the payment. That is a really serious oversight if we have that. If it's not people outside, if people outside are not in the position to track it, but the department itself must be able to track where is it. Because in most cases, the officials are the ones that are letting down the provider. A person submits a claim, maybe it's only running short of the address only, but there is a telephone there or a cell number there. And when the person has already left, the official is unable to say, this, I'm just giving an example, is running short of this, maybe an address or something. Just to pick up a phone and call the person to say, come and collect 123 on your submission. We don't do that. Until a person after 2 months or so, when starting to inquire, you are told, no, you only did not write this thing and something like that. So which means therefore that the person who is delaying will be the official, not necessarily the person who submitted. So we definitely have to address this issue of knowing where the bottleneck is, especially as far as our officials are affected. I think those are the issues that I wanted to talk to.
Thank you very much, Honorable Masiela. Honorable Masiela.
Thank you, sir. Let me follow the tips and congratulate the department for implementation. I've been covered most of my questions. These are my last speaker, so that's taking everything, but I've got 2 to 3 questions, very few questions. I heard department with this new system of but I never heard the backup. What is the backup? Is it crash or out of line? You know, with technology, everything is possible. The second one is the question of leases. Is that any public lease for any person who wanted to lease property from Department of Home Affairs? Or for private, only for private? That's on the region there. And also, how many years did the department give the lease? The offer period, how many years? Third one is the asset register. As far as I'm concerned, I'm not yet convinced that the number of the leads are given to us is accurate. Why I'm saying so is because we've been accused sometimes in the parliament by one of our colleagues, especially. We don't know the list of discounts, the assets of discounts. So I think we just have to be convinced that the list you are giving us the true reflection of the number of properties. The last one. No. I got the last one. Okay. Oh, the P7 of a construction project. Department mentioned that they've got the 3,000 projects that they're working on across the country, but not mentioning where, which province, and when, time frame, when they're going to finish it. Also, I would like to know the relationship between the province and national in terms of property, because when you go to this province, it is public, it belongs to province and national, so I can't know who in this room. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think indeed some members were wide awake when the department was presenting. The questions that have come does reflect that you have honourable members that are here. So the volume of the question, you know, members are worried about this issue of thinking everything is complex. Now, I think we must give you something like 5 minutes break. You stretch a little bit and you also talk to yourself about this thing of thinking everything is complex. Because we don't agree. Can we take a break, 5 minutes, then we will then come and answer.
I think that will complicate the matter.